First of all, I would like to say that I'm not able to speak Irish or understand Irish, but it was a great honor to witness this performance. It was brilliant. I was amazed and got the feeling of the Irish language, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay, this poem is called A Speech from a Doll. I was deserted before being created, a naked object in a black hole. So, who threw my body into the space, giving life and happiness for hours? I can't think of it, empty as I am. From the inmost recesses of my mind, I see through artificial eyes one, two, or three rooms for walls. Even the kindergarten of Adam and Eve, where I used to be toyed with, I spied the fence of the neighbor's paradise. Since I do not share my love, I was hauled by it and dropped onto the playground. Then X-Men took over for what I was needed for, separating me from my destiny. If nobody wants me, I'm not sad. Parts of myself has already felt poverty, for I was put together by a poor child. So being thrown away is nothing to care about. When my arms were taken out, I saw them in the best hands as the dog hunted for them with glee. When my body was given into the fire, I was reminded of those days in holy company with my torso. It must have ascended without pain. Unfortunately, one leg survived at the bin and got the full torture of wasted items. It can be difficult to maintain your dignity while divorcing from your humanity, when nobody holds you for good. After all, the head remained independent. Who knows how it happened to me, being floated in restful water and delivering a speech about the poor and the rich to cold fish. It is a cheap thrill to obtain a doll, and I wouldn't lament a dead loss.
God, you feel on a kid and I'm going to live. M. Noonan? Sorry. M. Noonan? Michael?
This is called Times. I got this idea. Someone said to me one day that you can never step into the river in the same place, you know, life inside. I came up with this and I wrote it on the 5th of October 2014. It seems long to me going on, but in the endless race, to fill that phase where life has no meaning, the river of time washes through the place I thought was my space. Don't lean too hard, you will be left scarred, rudderless on an ocean of emotion. Feel it, but let it go. Give it to the winds that blow. Come into the light, watch the darkness take flight.
Good evening. Thanks, Rob, for that vote of support. This, I'm going to read a little bit of a story. It won the Brian McMahon Short Story Award in the Soul, and that's why I thought we'd read it tonight, because our guests were from the Soul. It's kind of a comic horror set in an urban landscape in Dublin, and it's called Bad Grapes. Saturday morning in Myrtle Row. Terry Evans is reading the Irish Times in the conservatory when he hears shouting.
thinking it's the television, he gets up and pops his head into the living room. "What is it?" Mandy calls from the new kitchen extension. "There's someone outside in the street," Terry calls from the window. "It's Cormac, I think." Mandy abandons the granite island where she's been chopping vegetables and comes into the living room, clutching half a cauliflower that looks like a dissected brain. "Cormac? Cormac O'Gaherty?" There's little need for the surname. There's only one Cormac in Myrtle Row. He's a suburban legend, except he's real. But he's in prison, isn't he? Terry opens the window cautiously. He coached Cormac in soccer years ago. He remembers the unhappy teenager, friendless, his eyes a wilderness. Terry sticks his neck out the window. Cormac had a flair for football, and Terry had almost managed to get him onto the local team. "He's good, Terry," the selector said, "but wild, unpredictable, no team spirit." One summer, during a brief window of opportunity when Cormac was 14, Terry took him fishing. Terry dreamed of having a son, watching him grow, but it was not to be. It all seemed a long time ago now, another world. Terry believes that Cormac remembers his kindness to him, though, because neither Terry's car nor house has ever been vandalized, unlike some other houses in Myrtle Row. Terry frowns when he hears more shouting from the street and sticks his neck further out the window. Pity about Cormac. No one would give him a break. If only they could have overlooked the fact that he was an O'Gaherty. Mandy's lips are tight as she stands behind Terry at the window. She doesn't do if onlys. It mortifies her to have to drive past the O'Gaherty's house every day on her way to work. They should never have been allowed into Myrtle Row. They were social housing tenants. The council sneaked them in one summer while residents were distracted, some of them away on holidays in Marbella or Corfu. By September, it was too late. No one ever speaks the name O'Gaherty publicly, but everyone knows who they are. The name is only whispered or even just mouthed in discreet exchanges between informants and confidential recipients who trust one another. Secret, terrible pieces of information are handed over like a wild animal on a leash. The name O'Gaherty sends a tingle of alarm around, the way the name Manson or Capone might have done in the past. The name has a radioactive quality, like Chernobyl. Women's heels click faster and faster as they pass the O'Gaherty house, like Geiger counters. When Terry and Mandy first came into Myrtle Row, they were impressed. A nice, small, respectable estate, and the price of their house rose within a month of their buying, which was satisfactory. Of course, the tiger was over now. People had lost jobs, couldn't afford the mortgages, equity, and other things had become negative. And tales of ghost estates and repossessions around the country began to haunt the neighborhood. Fortunately, only one house on Myrtle Row was affected, but that had turned out to be a most unfortunate development. The council, in a sudden, uncharacteristic lefty move, brought one of the repossessed houses and shoveled the O'Gahertys in on Myrtle Row. Immediately, the tone of the neighbourhood dropped, not to mention the house prices. The council had given the O'Gahertys a probationary period. If there was any trouble within a year, they were out. The family kept to themselves for that year, pretending they were normal. After the probationary period, however, they began to crawl from under their stone. They got two young dogs, which they brought in after dark one night and kept them back out of sight. Stained blankets were seen hanging unevenly across windows for long periods, while it was presumed curtains were being washed. A cracked window pane was sellotaped over. The exterior paint began to flake as if the house had some terrible skin disease. The garden was completely neglected. Shrubs died. Flower beds were trampled underfoot. Tall weeds began to lounge insolently over the fence, leaning their heads out as if taunting the other residents. Two old prams were seen jammed against the side of the house. Mandy hoped this meant that the O'Gahertys weren't planning on having any more children. Not that she believed that any of the O'Gaherty children were planned.
Thank you.
Now we have Zamiko, Neil Weber.
To the Common Man, a poem by Julian Tuwim, translated from Polish to English by Marcel Weyland, first published in 1929. When plastered billboards scream with slogans, "Fight for your country, go to battle." When media sprint assaults your senses, "Support our leaders," shrieks and rattles. And fools who don't know any better believe the old eternal lie that we must march and shoot and kill, murder and burn and bomb and grill. When press begins the battle cry that nation needs to unify and for your country you must die. My brainwashed friend, my neighbor dear, brother from this or other nation, know that the cries of anger, fear are nothing but manipulation by fat cats, kings who covet riches and feed off your sweat and blood, the leeches. When called to arms engulfs the land, it means that somewhere oil was found, shooting black gold from underground. It means they found a sneaky way to make more money, grab more gold, but this is not what you are told. Don't spill your blood for bucks or oil. Burn, break your rifle, shout no deal. Let the rich scoundrels, kings and bankers send their own children to get killed. May your loud voice be amplified by roar of other common men, the battle weary of all nations. We won't be conned to war again. Herman.
Seamus Harrington.
Red wheelbarrow in Scotland. God's gable end. Lump hammers and chisels ring in the moonlight. Old Norman commission removed in one chunk. Improper, Monsignor, shedding scant lighting, should never be mounted on God's gable end. Lugged to the causeway while crickets are rasping, dumped in the seaway, don't utter a word. Oh no, gasped the mermaid, sheeling a gig, shiver my lumbers, who ordained this? Thank you.
And Eugene Crowley?
Turn on the hina and green the tenet. Last me, the last dawn. Michelle Spanish. The book Leo again in the lane upon on Ben in the Laguna St. Andrews. Friday evening, sun shining outside a burning hotel bar. me and Beamish. The young boys in their white shirts. The woman in her St. Andrew's dress. Sinead.
Investigate this giant naked goddess, bathing in our sacred jungle. Climb the mounds of her skin and everywhere in between. One by one, or even two by two, get to the bottom of this mountainous creature. Explore that scent, so unfamiliar to our senses, and draws us closer. Use those dexterous legs to discover what is only limited by her sweeping boundaries. If nothing else, use her sweeping movements to be catapulted across the terrestrial and into grasses of newfound land.
Coming along with me, and Emily Davis Fletcher.
Oh, woo!
Brenna Shaughnessy was here and she read and I was able to be in her workshop and I brought this poem and she was like, that's all female swagger, you know, it's female swagger, we need more of that. So I'm going to read this to you all and I hope that you guys start writing female swagger poems then as well, me then writing them. So this is called Stings. They're nothing spectacular, but they'll do, you let slip. As you wiggle close in bed, reach through moonlight, cut my right breast. Like a drowning bee you save in your hand, I could sting you. On the beach in Barcelona, I folded my swimsuit down to my waist, daring you not to notice every other woman's bikini top, sprawled in the sand, like jellyfish stunned by a mate. Remember that man, selling small cans of beer at inflated prices. He tread carefully around volcanic islands of women, their nipples the first spurts of lava, to rest on his haunches beside me. His skin, the color of ripe barley at sunset, I rolled onto a shadow. I could sting you again in the magic house of my childhood. I place you upstairs, your hands roaming over a glass ball bigger than your head. Electric blue cracks rise from your palms and fingertips to its core, as every hair on your body jerks up, like an animal sensing something spectacular. Downstairs, the sunset on Barley Man and I are on all fours. Taking turns, we press a cheek against the cool floor, peer into a hole in the wall the size of a cat's eye. Our pupils dilate, then constrict, as a white light springs on two pale mice, sitting at a butcher block table, buttering toast and stirring tea with the curved blades of their tails. Thank you.
Come on, good Emily. Patricia Watt.
I was walking westward a couple of years ago and one of the single features was a pub called The Sky in the Ground. And it was a very distinctive pub. On the first floor it was a craft beer. And in the ground floor you have like a L-shaped room which was a snow. And that I used to sit down there and jump right away, you know, with, like party every day of my way. So it's called The Sky in the Ground, a Yola song. Wrapping from words, a brilliant detour to a front of house snug living room. Served through a cubby hole in the bar, checking deficits, thoughts and blessings counted. From an elevated view, the people mill past, a slow drinking pint punctuates will. Jotting in the half light, witnessing the page, come alive despite questions on the table. Soliciting laughter, certainly on track, the craft beer is upstairs, exiting one vanity. Small wonder is troubling in the small hours. Regular occurrences dying in the night. Functional alcoholics play a profession. Resting festive bars with one ring and a prayer. Rearranging the frame of aggrandizement. Just walking away is a blessing. Noisy, alone, an empty vessel rattling. Costing significant before the night. No more strange times I am, tedium permitting. Drinking on time, still as she goes. Pedestrianized streets, humble walkways. Sentimental jewellery flashes at will. Empty reckonings at last past. Resting of words like an argument. Thank you.
Your mom, Patricia. Slán oa de mora. Slán it. Rae Hanrahan.
This is one I read back a while, so apologies to those of you who are going to hear it again. It doesn't have a title. Oh, to be a tree and have your feet firmly planted in the ground, to stand tall in the sky, drinking light and eating air. Oh, to laugh when cars bounce off me, to marvel in my own stoutness, to make pleasant sounds I cannot hear, to stand up to the winter winds and to shelter a cloud of crows when shadows lengthen of a summer's evening. And oh, to course my rooted boots that fix me to this eternal spot, when the hot oil breaths of chainsaws come and the fear rises in my sap.
This one's titled Initial Frontier. As a lot of stuff I read, it's sci-fi. Out of breath, she finally reaches the docking area. What seems a well of light and grey to her consciousness is all too slow for instinct. She's on the edge of everything, space and a thought. As seconds pass, she realizes no one is on her trail anymore, and it's almost too good. Panting, she looks around and unconsciously smiles. Warning, depressurized area, says the panel. The irony is not lost on the one searching for a second wind, but the relax of seconds breeds a nearly suspicious minute. They will not come to her, not alive, not anymore. She panics, regrets not keeping about her those wits that put her in this situation. The palpitations of her heart follow the increase of luminosity of the docks. An animal petrified by fright in blindness, unable to process anything anymore, until a horn resounds, filling the space. She, who knew too much, knows this too. Her last chance has come with a deepening sound. On the last race, against time, with a heavy rotation of the iris gate for stopwatch, she runs towards the emergency suit. As she sets the helmet and torso airtight, the breeze of the escaping air had become a gale which turned into irresistible suction. A firm grip upon the lower half of the suit, and she lets go of everything else. Fears, resistance, struggles, and for a moment, hope and memories, nothing. She was headed there, with shut eyes, her tight lips covering every pinch of nothing. When the cold of the galactic void pinches through the underwear, she swiftly slips into the second half of the suit, assumes a good posture, and presses the area around her chest. When she feels the reassuring inflated envelope, she starts praying for her own safety with another tip. Because I ignore the call of ignorance and stupidity, must I fall and submit to gravity? I swear to keep mind and feet firmly on the ground, on the truth that is not taught, rather found. She swears some more that her heart will not sway, and surrender to the laws of physics drift away, entrusting herself to everything, anything, to the dark and unseen, to nothing.
Charles?
Leave it. Hello. Lost. I lost land, lovely earth, and all the world. That is a poem, and like a longing. I have in fact read this before, but a little apology to Michael Longley. Poet on his belly with binoculars as 10 swans rise from the lake. Someone had given the game away. And following that, arrived by Michael Longley. This is very charming in a way. He does have a second house on the coast of Mayo, in which he spent a great deal of time counting birds and other things of that kind. And his wife used to be the professor of English at Belfast. I have met her, she's the most charming woman. And she had to do, I think, on the whole, a lot more work than he had. But that's another story. Arrival. It is as though David had whitewashed the cottage and the gateposts in the distance for this moment. The Hoover Swan's arrival, with you wide awake in your white nightdress at the erratic boulder, counting through binoculars. Oh, what day is it this October? And how many of them are there?
Charles,
next up is Rav. I have my glamorous assistant. On the way to this convocation, stopped by the motorway service station. There we found the mouth of truth, no lies. So I put my money in the crack and I've got me electronic feedback telling me stuff about my life. No lies. He said, "You're crusty, you are bad, grow up, stop acting like a little lad and turn your cap to rapey rainbow tail lines!" He said, "Ignorance, the responsibility is know yourself. your capabilities. Act like a model for the youth. Don't tell lies. Instead, take this message to the convocation. Shall we all give a demonstration? Speak up, be a word for truth. Don't tell lies. Don't tell lies.
It's Thomas Quayle. I'll explain it a little. It's a revolution again, if you like. It's a quiet revolution in a suburban garden, where life is going way over the walls. Her torn. Kimi explained who a guardian not the local should border into a rule file as an art card. Hornica slough the woolly ella a garb the lay of the tussock. The gallow the cream is tear of vello a cup. A broom a sauna a shale tahi yed augur. Dig a near Debbie Crown hit the logus ra er fra lean er blean. The slacker block boshti green is gwaed dos cre chwil in a frewig. A rod ar corn creelach. Rahnach an chopo chuhil is fair an chrahas a chwyna. Crown shtirali na mach loga fillig dos ro or this council. Geag a cas the chrapa ar chwil na gartini loch la chayirig is hiin. Chwini na gothat ag bora, chwilt na gwarna. Chwyr si ledon yn tîl ar fahalish na hein, ffogadon dyn y galwyn, aidon a fadicu nad spidoiga le gartig ag liwra. Ma'n gondol mys yn cyrsio chwyd pwrlint, fa'n ffadar na chwyt. Mil na gawr yn hwra ar ala Mil na gawr yn hwra ar ala Tronol Sawrig Fel yn fach ar tywrn Ond y liog dra fawr on o sgwb yn Tysbach yn elstrwm Iarag yn y nwrsia Ond il ni fefla yn il ni eich ffrifwla Gwnnwch dwch dim maid ni grein yn teb Fe lyf na gynnal brysdyn Nos na rawn dwf Smyrdiam o'n sadrwm yn arbara E glas fwy tri ynwch gas loed yr lawmer Hwy lyffiant ys yn eirwn Gwyr lwnig i fwrch y manstrwch Ys y gwyslaw yn orda E tyhi yr llwrn Gach e'n flwyr i de yn ite Anra yn charis nawn tog ys bilwr yn y halta Swf gyflwys i de Even y sasaf
Osna O'Hanf. Mae'n ymwneud â'r ymwneud â'r ymwneud â'r Agus Phillips Mann.
Thank you. So I'm taking a bit of a risk. I like fooling around with words, and I have a poem here that whichever way you read it, left, right, up, down, diagonal, it still makes sense. And I'm going to try and read it out, and if it sounds weird, that's because it's shaped in a way that works. So, sleeping away secrets, away secret lips, slips, sleeping secret slips. Thank you.
And last but not least, on the open mic is Molly Jimmy.
Oh. Dear Caroline, from the Irish Sun, I respectfully decline your invitation to sell my soul through sensation. My mental health is not a hot new trend to finance your Yorkie's check bow tie, velvet Valentino purse, or Dubai sunbeds. Anorexia is not a bit of goss, a scandal, nor a creepy little fetish to scan on a bus or over a soy latte at Starbucks. Over 2,000 of us on this island suffocate from perfumes that feed on our flesh, and you want an inside scoop to be served up to you flashy and fresh. Is it a picture you yearn for of my baylock eyes, scarecrow hair, wired collarbones, or a wicked witch of the past sucking heat from cauldrons and unconditioned love for my mother's hanging heart? Will you ask me how it felt to be tugged and tempted by the communal coffin of the coral? So many of us cannot seize her screams and try to kill her at any means. And if I cry, well, all the better. You can snap a cheeky selfie for your Instagram, display to the nation your undying support of skinny girls and starvation. No doubt you'll assume I'm better now as my face and hips plume, ignoring the fact that this is a mental illness with physical side effects. It does not discriminate men, women, black, white, gay, straight. It aims at us all, but of course you picked me, the privileged white girl. And where will you put said article? Beside recipes for water-based meals and advertisements for laxative teas? Or maybe next to who wore it best, or which Irish actress has the best chest? The best advice I can give to fellow victims is to bin the tabloids that feed on our sickness. Kind regards, Molly Dooney.